Exodus chapter 17, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys, according to the commandment of the Lord, and pitched in Rephidim. And there was no water for the people to drink. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said unto them, "Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, "Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?" And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "What shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said unto Moses, "Go on before the people, and take with thee of the elders of Israel, and thy rod, wherewith thou smotest the river, take in thine hand, and go. Behold, I will stand before thee there upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the chiding of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, "Choose us out men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand." So Joshua did as Moses had said to him, and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side, and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Write this for a memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi, for he said, "Because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation." May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Well, it's almost like a broken record. In verses 1 through 7, we have once again the murmuring of the people. This is the fourth instance of their murmuring, and it is as wicked as it was before. And so they come to Moses, and they bring their complaint to Moses, and Moses tells them the truth when he says, "It's not me you're murmuring against, you're tempting the Lord. You're putting yourself in the way of the Lord's judgments. You're putting yourselves in the way of the Lord's chastisements. You're tempting him. You're presuming upon his mercy. You're thinking he won't mistreat us even though we murmur, and so you feel rather free in your murmuring." Presumption is another name for this sin that they have committed. And so Moses goes to the Lord and he says, "What am I going to do with this people? They're about ready to stone me." Now, I don't think Moses was exaggerating here. I don't think this is Moses just coming before the Lord in exasperation. I think there was a real gleam, a real threat in the eyes of the people, and that Moses felt that threat rather acutely, and that they were taking their deprivation out on Moses rather than on where it belonged, and that was upon themselves for their murmuring and self-seeking ways. Why was it that the Lord withheld water from them at this point? Well, it's implicit. It's not explicit in the text, but it is implicit that they are still a murmuring lot. And so the Lord has deprived them of water. And what do they do? Instead of turning the guns inward, they turn them on Moses. Instead of turning them upon their own heart, they turn them upon Moses. Now, it will be self-serving of me to simply say that pastors always get the blame. It's not what I'm going to say. But I am going to say that no matter who we are, no matter our stations, it is the temptation of all men to blame something else than themselves, when the blame, at least part of the blame, can be found securely upon them. I cannot be responsible for your wrongdoing, but I can be responsible for my own. And that's the point that needs to be made here. And so the people, they have blamed Moses instead of thinking more on the wickedness of their own heart, murmuring and complaining against the Lord. For Moses' part, it would have been wrong of Moses to say something like, "What are you going to do with this, your people over here?" And so notice what the Lord does. He brings them back to Horeb. They're at this great big rock face in Horeb. And the Lord says, "Take your rod and strike the rock." Now, when the Apostle Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 that there was a rock that followed them, let's understand that's not a rock rolling around behind the Israelites as they marched through the wilderness. Let's understand that every time they stopped and were in need, there was a rock there. And that rock was a metaphor for Christ. That it was Christ that fed them. It was Christ that gave them water. It was Christ that taught them. It was Christ that revealed the law to them. It was Christ that said, "I'm the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me." It was Christ. It was Christ. It was Christ. Everywhere they went, he was there. That's the point that Paul is making. Don't think that this rock that first appears here in Horeb followed them over to the other place where Moses struck the rock instead of speaking to the rock. No, that was a different rock materially, but typologically it was the same rock. That's the point. And so Moses strikes the rock and the water gushes out. Again, they are in the midst of complaint, and what does the Lord do? He gives them water. It's not based on their works. If it was based on their works, they'd be destroyed by now. This is not a covenant of works. It's not anything like a covenant of works. The Lord continues to be merciful and to forgive and to provide. He's still feeding them with manna. Notice all we have is Exodus 16. But Exodus 16 works until the time the manna ceases, when Joshua brings them over Jordan. Until that time, we can just assume that they got manna every day. God never cut them off, even though they cut him off in their own affections. And here, he adds to that in that he has Moses strike the rock and water gushes out. And there are many preachers that have seen a parallel here between Christ on the cross and the blood and water coming from his side, and the blood and water being indicative of the provision that he has for his people. And I'm not opposed to that kind of metaphor. However, I don't want to press it so far as to say that's what this passage is about. Yes, it is a metaphor. And yes, it does remind us of that. But the teaching of this passage is the grace of God in the midst of murmuring sinners. Isn't that who we are? Isn't that who we are? Aren't we murmuring sinners? Don't we rather see what we don't have rather than what we do? And doesn't that come up to the fore and glaze over all of our other vision? Well, many times it does. And so in our refusal to give thanks, a refusal to acknowledge God, many times, although we manifest ourselves, much like the man that we saw in Romans 1 today, the Lord continues to feed us. He continues to give us drink. He continues to provide for us. He continues to be gracious and merciful to us. This is the kind of God we have. And although we deserve simply, like the children of Israel here, to die of thirst in the wilderness, or to go back to Egypt and be slain like they said they wanted to, the Lord continues to provide for us and to be merciful to us. So then not only does the Lord provide for them in giving them water, but that provision is extended. Interestingly, so then, if the Lord wanted to destroy Israel, he has a perfect tool in his hand. Here's Amalek. Ooh. A wicked, murmuring people. Amalek over here. Let's put it together and see what happens. No, the Lord doesn't do that. Instead, what he does is he provides another way to show himself faithful to his people in the defeat of the Amalekites by setting Moses up on a hill with his rod, and Aaron and Hur up there with him, and Joshua with the army down in the field. And every time Moses' hands go up, the children of Israel prevail. And when they come down, the children of Israel are defeated. And so the people of Israel might understand that the battle is not theirs, that it's the Lord's. That the Lord is continuing to provide for them. He's continuing to protect them. He's continuing to bring forth His gracious promises to them. Although for their part, they're just a murmuring lot of malcontents. It's a great story. And so Moses gets tired. Notice that Aaron and Hur, first of all, I don't know how old Hur was, but I know that Aaron was older than Moses. Right? And so here's Aaron, the older brother of Moses. Moses says, man, I can't keep my arms up anymore. And so they bring a rock, and he sits down on the rock, and Aaron on one side, Hur on the other, and they hold up his hands. Because although the battle is the Lord's, notice that it is not even by the power of Moses that it goes forward. That no man is an island to himself. That Moses needs the help of Aaron and Hur in order that he might simply hold his hands up, that Israel might prevail. And so this teaches us that no man gets the glory on that day. God gets the glory. Moses cannot sustain even holding up his hands, let alone not being down in the field. And yet it is at the raising up of his hands that Amalek is defeated by the Israelites under the command of Joshua. And finally then in the chapter we see that Moses is commanded to write this stuff down and to make sure that Joshua reads it. The Lord wants Joshua specifically Joshua to remember, because it is Joshua that will lead the people into the land of promise just 39 years from now. And the Lord wants to prepare right now Joshua for that day when he will lead the army. And so the Lord tells Moses, make sure you write that down and make sure that Joshua reads it and remembers. Isn't that great? And so when it is time for Joshua to lead the people into the land of promise, Joshua is a man trained and prepared and assured that God will fight the battles. Let's stand and continue praising.